Welcome to the Best of the Sports Shop podcast with Reese and K-Mac.
Bubba Wallace gets his first career win. He's just the second African-American to ever win at the highest level of NASCAR. Over 50 years ago, Wendell Scott was the first. Bubba Wallace now officially the winner at Talladega.
It was exciting.
News breaking on yesterday. Very, very exciting. I'm happy to say he did it. Well, I'm happy to say he did it in the state of Alabama at Talladega. We remember we was in Talladega, I think, was it last year, a couple of years ago. We had a little controversy going on where they thought somebody had left, a noose down in this training pit, if you will. But a good look for Bubba. Historic in a lot of ways since 1963. Wendell Scott was the first African-American to ever win a race. And we know a lot of stories and history about Wendell Scott from Danville, Virginia. His son is a friend of the show, been on the show many times, grandson, been on the show many times pitching the Wendell Scott Foundation. So just happy for Bubba. And let's get some reaction from Bubba, because again, when I heard this, because I didn't follow it. I'm not sure was it on television or not, but it was a rain delay from Sunday. But let's hear Bubba Wallace on getting his first win. Let's take a listen.
This weekend, man, it felt different. It felt like something, like I knew for sure we were going to win. And it was the same feeling that I had back in 2013 when I won my first truck race. So I need to start bringing that feeling back more and more. But man, just a special day. Just with everything that's going on here at Talladega, the history of this place, and everything that's gone on in my camp for the last 15, 16 months, it's kind of fitting that my first win comes here.
Well, you just talked about it. Mm-hmm. You guys' thoughts, man. I just thought it was, you know, I become more of a NASCAR fan probably in the last 6 or 7 years that I've ever had in my life, and through a lot of relationships with Asco, as well as my friend Phil Ford, who's a big NASCAR fan. But Bubba has been on our show. We talked to him many times down in Charlotte. But this is a big deal, K-Mac. This is huge.
We've been going back and forth about the progression of NASCAR and where it is, and can it survive, you know, the transition, so to speak, because you know. It's been going through kind of a transition from what it used to be, you know, 10, 20 years ago, to, you know, bringing it up to a modern sport, being more inclusive. And I think this is just another step. And I congratulate Bubba Wallace, especially knowing him, having an opportunity to talk to him personally. He's a really good guy. I used to follow his show that was on, I think it was on Facebook Live or whatever.
Yeah, Facebook Live.
A little bit about it.
Yeah.
And it's really good. And good to see the sponsors getting behind him, because maybe it's true what they said. If you get a sponsor that can spend a little bit more money, get a little bit better equipment and cars, the kid can win because he can drive. So shout out to Bubba Wallace and the entire team. So maybe this is just a start.
I know that Michael Jordan obviously is part of the racing team, on the racing team along with Denny Hamlin. So the GOAT, he wins another one. I mean, you know, he wins NBA championships, and he wins NASCAR races, fam. That's kind of cool for Michael too,
as well. That's cool. He knows how to win and where to go to get the win.
Wait a minute, did he win Big Rock? Did he win that? He didn't win that, did he?
I can't remember. I'm not sure he won. They caught the largest fish. I don't think they won, though. Wait, maybe they did. I can't remember. A couple years ago, right?
I think they placed, but I don't think they actually won the overall.
Right. Mm. So what was the big deal, though? I mean, it was Michael was in the maybe at the time they had caught the largest fish down there during that tournament, but maybe they lost. Yeah, I don't think they won, but yeah. He was in the running. I mean, he wins everything. I mean,
he hasn't won
yet. What about the Hornets?
Lord. Yeah. Here we go.
Huh? He wins most things, K-Mac.
Right. Okay. We talk about
the Charlotte Hornets.
How wonderful he is.
The who?
The Charlotte Hornets.
That was
That sounds like somebody say.
I know. It sounded like something said. It sounded like something said on this show. Continue with this conversation. Wow. Bubba Wallace, the second African American to win a NASCAR race. Of course, he talked about he won the Truck Series, but a race. But this is a NASCAR, which is a big deal, and even more significant. Bubba talked about impact on being the first black driver winning this in a long time. Take a listen.
And it's so special, you know. This is for this win is for the next generation coming up through, and you know, I turned 28 on Friday, so it's a heck of a birthday present for myself. But you know, it's about the people that are watching, the ones at home that feel inspired by this. Is to, hey, to never give up on your dreams, to always keep pushing, stay true to yourself, don't let anybody tell you different, and things will settle in place as they should. And that's how I've always focused on my career. I knew there would be a lot of barriers broken starting out in the ranks and go-karts and stuff, but we were just there to have fun and win races and be the best that I can be. And that's able to show today.
Wow. There you go.
Awesome. Wow. History-making, Wallace.
And of course, it's funny how the world is. Like, so I've been seeing tweets about, well, he really didn't win because, you know, they called it because of the weather.
Right.
Really? Really? So when they called the other races because of the weather, they call that a win too, don't they? So why
is it really a loss? If you lose because they call it because of the weather, is it a loss?
Oh, Lord.
I mean, wow.
I'm just asking.
Nah, man, but.
But, you know,
I was going to say,
he feels that pressure because he was also talking about in one of the interviews that it was, you know, he was into the moment, but he couldn't help but just think about the significance of what he had done, but how all the time when he's going to these races and he's getting booed and things like that, and people like, it's okay as long as they're making noise, but he knew what the noise was about. So just the weight that he was carrying, this is just amazing for him.
Yeah, and Let's not glaze over the obvious that, I mean, this is a sport that has been a very uninclusive sport for a long, long time. Right. And this is a sport that's been dominated by a lot of hatred as relates to African Americans or even minorities in general. And now we have African American winning one. Talladega's a big race. Hell, they made up a move about it. Talladega Nights. So Talladega is one of the most dangerous and one of the most popular races there are on the NASCAR circuit. So when you look at the backdrop of all what's transpired up to this point, this is probably more significant than we even can talk about it. And they also asked Bubba Wallace, what message to young people with this, what would be told to young people regarding this? Let's take a listen.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it takes everything you have in your body to push you to be the best that you can be at the top level of any sport that you want to compete in. You know, there's a reason why I went 100 and something races without a win in the Cup Series, because this sport is so tough. And so you just stay hungry. You stay true to your word. You stay true to your craft and always continue to perfect it and push yourself. You know, I push myself to be more aggressive this weekend, and look where we're at. So just always, always push yourself to be the best.
You know, It's interesting, you guys, both of you guys say that, talk about the weight that was on his shoulders and and the pressure that he felt. You know, Reese, you know, we always talk about on the show, a lot of times people don't, from the outside looking in, they assume that as African Americans, we don't have, a modern day African Americans, we don't have that weight, right, of achievement. We don't have weight of being the first. We don't have that weight of, you know, winning or being better. This is just another example. If you can see the emotion on his face, that weight exists. It is a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
It is a real thing. And people are doing it in all types of sectors, all over the country, anywhere you could imagine is happening every day.
Even
you would think it wouldn't be happening every day, but it really is happening every day.
Yeah.
Doors are being opened. People have been grinding for 30 years, 20 years, and that weight is a real thing. So when you look across the hall at your colleague and say, I don't know why he's so emotional. It's a reason. Trust me, it is a reason.
That's right.
I agree with you 110%. And I love the fact you mentioned it's in all sectors, not just in the studio, not just on the racetrack, or in the locker room sometime, or head coach, or even vice president of his country, or many other places. It's people been grinding for a long time, but then when you reach that pinnacle, it becomes, I said pinnacle, it becomes. It becomes that much more significant. So, yeah. So, the reason we're talking about it, because we're highlighting it, because it's significant to us, because sometimes we lived it at this. In the job that we have now, we lived it in our previous jobs that we have in corporate America. So let's just keep it 100. That's just the way it is. But man, let's celebrate. It's unbelievable. I'm so happy for Bubba. So I have a question, because I was thinking about this with Michael winning, and being the owner of the Hornets and that kind of thing. Who has the most perfect? Yesterday I was talking about Tom Brady being perfect. Mm. Would you rather be Michael Jordan or Tom Brady? Is the question I got.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I'm gonna say.
I mean, being Tom Brady is not bad now. Let's just keep
100. No, it's not bad.
Well, damn, being Mike ain't too bad either.
Mike.
Do you remember the documentary from last year? Mike's a pretty good. He's pretty good now. He was pretty good what he did.
No, of course. I it was just a thought.
It's Michael.
Just thought provoking. But it's Michael for me too. Yeah. Ooh. Black Silk, is it?
Yeah.
I'm just asking.
I was gonna say that.
The paper that comes with it with Michael Jordan.
D.R. Reese, a.k.a. Yeah. Black Silk, baby. Let's go.
You had to take it there.
Just for you.
You just had to take it there. Always reducing a man down to just that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. He asked the question.
Yeah, I did. And you gave me an answer. But, I think it's really cool that we're talking about this. And because I was wondering, I said, man, will Bubba ever win one? Now, Richard Petty probably was like, oh, you're going to win one now. And the reason Richard Petty is saying that, because Richard Petty was the one that gave him the opportunity to race for him for a while. And he just couldn't get it done. So when Bubba left, Petty race guys and came over to Michael and Denny Hamlin, less than what, a few months or so, boom, he's winning now. Huh?
Now, Reese, let's be honest now. Now, although we love the Petty team, the Petty crew, they always treat us great.
They treat us good, so that's why I'll be nice to them.
But on the word on the street was a better team with more money, with better money, he could win.
Yeah,
that's what, 'cause that's how the sport is built, I guess.
And it's funny you say that. If you think about all the NFL teams, or even the NBA teams that spend most money, most of the time, those are the ones that win all the time. Case in point, when you spend a lot of money in this race car industry, NASCAR industry, if you will, you're gonna win. And Michael got that money. That's what happens.
Let's be honest. Let's look at the NBA. Yeah. Hell, John Wall should be an NBA champion, but he got stuck in damn Washington.
He did.
You know what I mean?
Did,
it is he what did. It is, but he got stuck in Washington.
All right. But I'm pretty sure that was a few reasons why Bubba, I mean, other than, Michael didn't happen, put up the money. But that's about three other reasons why Bubba Wallace won the Talladega 500. First, he had his Pepsi Zero Sugar. Second, he had his Mountain Dew Zero Sugar. And he rocked and rolled with official sports apparel, other sports shop, which is on the arm. We're keeping right and kept him tight. Down to Tad Digger yesterday.
Get it right, get it tight. Call a Pock, Bubba Sparks, Ying Yang Twins.
I just apologize to the team and staff and for being a distraction. It was stupid. And so I explained everything that happened, and
owned it, and, you know, just stupid. Should not have myself in that kind of position.
Okay, man, what's that? What's that room we used to have? What's IDIOT? What's that room we used to have?
IDIOT.
we put people to Sir Road. I'm talking about. I think we're going to put Urban Meyer, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, in that room, and we'll explain why. And don't everybody text me last night. Everybody texted me last night about the doggone Raiders. Except for who? No, you didn't text me.
I didn't text you either. I wanted to, though.
Pam, you sure you didn't text me, Pam?
I'm positive. DC. I don't think so.
DC, did you text me
last night? No, I didn't.
Okay, right. All right.
Well, so
I knew the morning shall come. And yes, okay. Lord is here.
Okay, but don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. DC, what we got?
Goodness. It's the Sports Shop with Reese and K-Mac.
So, Dennis, I know we had a very intense poll yesterday. Can you give us the final results of what happened with that poll on yesterday?
So the question was, at Buzz Sports Radio on Twitter, which ACC football team in the state of North Carolina is the best right now? Is it Wake, NC State, UNC, or Duke? Right now, 52.1% of the voters say it's Wake Forest, with 30.7% saying it's NC State.
So wait a minute. So Carolina's like, okay.
They're third at 16.4%.
Right. Well, you know what? I got a little beef because I'm not. Okay, man.
And Duke has received votes.
Thank you. I have a little problem there, but maybe this guy who's coming in calling in on Houston Automotive Group Hotline, a guy that's been with us for a long time at the Sports Shop, normally talking hoops, but now he's definitely works for the News Observer, and he covers the University of North Carolina Chapel here, all sports, and maybe he can help us out with why Carolina's ranked so low in this poll. Welcome back to the Sports Shop, C.L. Brown. What's going on, brother? How you doing?
Hey, I'm glad to be back, brother.
Glad to have you, my friend.
So, C.L., we had this poll, though, the best team in North Carolina, college team in North Carolina, and it was, of course, Wake, then State, and now Carolina. And if we had asked this question a month and a half ago, I think the results would have been a little different, right?
Well, I think maybe not. Well, I think the big thing for Carolina right now is they haven't been consistent. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The thing about Wake Forest, undefeated record aside, they have been consistent. Now, you can look at the actual schedule that they've played and poke holes in it and say, well, Carolina's played tougher teams. I mean, having to open the road at Virginia Tech, coming off of a year where you had basically no crowds in the stands. So even the sophomores who Carolina is dependent on, you know, they got a lot of sophomores in the lineup, like Miles Murphy, Tony Grimes on defense, and even Josh Downs at receiver. They've never played in front of a crowd like that before. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
it was a new experience. That was a tough game. You know, obviously they lost that. And I think the bigger disappointment was the way they lost at Georgia Tech. But, you know, you got to give it up to Wake Forest for how consistent they've been. And even State had the lapse. Like, to lose at Mississippi State isn't bad, but the way that they played, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a dip. Like, they haven't been consistent either. So so you got to give it up for them Demon Deacons right now.
Okay.
Sounds like a play. Look, so we're talking with C.L. Brown. We're talking a little ACC college football. And you talk about Wake Forest. Wake Forest being, I guess at this point, being the top dog in the ACC. Can they survive? Will they make it through the rest of the season undefeated?
I'm not betting on it, but but that's a reflection of how college football has been this year. I mean, unless you Alabama, you know, even Georgia, to me, everybody's on this Georgia bandwagon, but I mean, Georgia's offense they don't do it for me. Like, their defense is top notch, you know, no question, but people act like that win over Clemson, they scored a defensive touchdown. They didn't even score on offense. You know what I mean? Like, a slugfest. And somehow Clemson, you know, not being what we've become used to with Clemson, it just, you know, people just soured on it. I didn't think they should have dropped all the way out of the poll. You know, Florida has two losses too, and they stayed in it. And you know, losing at Kentucky, losing at NC State in double overtime. You know what I'm saying? You can poke holes in a lot of stuff right now, but. Yeah. But yeah, I just think outside of Alabama, a lot of teams are in the same boat, and we're that's why the polls have been kind of so volatile, and we're going to continue. I think we're going to continue to see kind of people get knocked off, and there people be wondering who's actually good.
Yes. Right.
I had a question. I wanted to ask you what you thought about your thoughts for NC State and what's coming.
Well, I mean, I think this bye week comes at a good time for them to kind of regroup because, you know, they're about to hit the conference schedule hard. Getting past Clemson was a big mental hurdle for them. And I'm not sure that I'm totally in line with Dave Doran saying that the curse is over.
Right.
But they had to win that game. Everything had aligned for them at home. So, you know, I mean, I think moving forward, I think that game at the end of the year when they get Carolina on November 26th could end up being a big game in terms of where both teams end up in the conference standings and could possibly have some bearing on whether one of those teams makes it to the ACC championship game.
Man, we're talking to C.L. Brown, a regular on the Sports Shop, and just having back on for the first time in a while. He covers UNC Chapel Hill for News Observer. And C.L., I got to switch gears a little bit. It is basketball practice season and preseason, if you will, here in college. And a couple, I guess, some related questions. One is that I thought I saw the player of the year when I went over to the Duke Media Day with Paolo Banchero. I've never seen nobody that big since I saw LeBron that can play at all positions. Your thoughts on him?
When you just said that, I wish I was in the studio because knowing you, first I thought you were being sarcastic.
No, I know, because you know this is really hard for me to even say this. You know, I'm serious though, but I thought the dude, give us a little insight if you can on him in terms of. What do you think his expectations? Because he's a special. I think he's going to be a special guy for the Blue Devils.
I think he is that special. I think he's going to be that dude for Duke this year. And, you know, the one thing that I'm kind of curious to watch with Duke is how the thing about they got a lot of skill and a lot of talent on their roster. But how will they handle this being Coach K's last hurrah? Like, that's a whole nother level of stuff to heap on a young team. You know, I just – I think some of that could end up being a distraction for them. You know, I also wonder, like, how Coach K is managing that, you know, on how he will manage it on a week-to-week and game-to-game kind of basis. And, man, I'm thinking those games against Carolina, like, I think kids could be hyperventilating before they even tip the ball. You know, it's just going to be – but you know what? They're going to have a lot of games like that where there's going to be a buildup. I mean, even the opener with Kentucky, that's going to be a game where it's going to be a lot of eyeballs, a lot of hype. It's really not going to help the way TV – all their broadcasts, ESPN is going to hype up Coach K's last hurrah. This is, you know, the final go, you know. So, so as talented as he is, and he's got all the talent in the world, you know, I think that's another level that's just kind of an intangible that we're going to have to keep an eye on this year. Will that basically exhaust these kids because they have to kind of bear the weight of this last go-round?
Coach K's already told all of you this is not his last anything.
That's right. Don't use the word last.
Now, he's already told you once now. Now you're gonna keep saying it. Now we already said it. This is not his last anything. See, Reese knew that he was there. You were there, Reese. Now you heard him say it now.
He said it.
Just for that very reason what CL just talked about. Taking the pressure off of these young people, the last of this, the last time in Cameron, the last time. No, it's not the last. So stop it. I know what you guys are doing.
He's going to coach again? Like Mike Hopkins at Syracuse, be the coach in waiting, and Coach K still coach another 5 years?
Possibly. Stop it. All right, CLC, we're going to let you get out here. But, hey, quick question, my friend, before I let you get out. You always do this. Back to football real quickly. Yeah. Is there one sleeper, because you love to give me the unsung hero. Is there one sleeper that we all seem to be overlooking so far?
That's a good question. I wouldn't call them sleeper, but I'm still big on Cincinnati, and I think these group of five teams, they have to – it's not about what they do in one season. It has to be a buildup. Like Boise State, for all those years, they never really got a shot to play a Power 5 team. And then, because they were so consistently good, and then they get their shot and they knocked off Oklahoma that year. I think that was the Fiesta Bowl, or that wasn't Fiesta, whatever bowl it was. You know what I'm saying? Right. I think Cincinnati, with what they did last year, going undefeated and then losing to Georgia, and they were up 21-10 in the fourth quarter on Georgia in the Peach Bowl, in the heart of Georgia. You know what I'm saying? And Georgia has to have this serious comeback to win on the last second field goal. I think what they just did going into Notre Dame, I don't think Notre Dame is great, but you still don't just, that's a huge win to go into South Bend and come away with the win that they dominated. Right. They're up 17-0 in that game. So I think Cincinnati is a team people better respect and watch out for.
All right, CL. Hey, man, it's great to have you back on. Of course, you'll be on with us often, and we appreciate you, man, jumping on with us this morning. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
And by the way, guys, all is not lost over in Chapel Hill in terms of basketball. Don't get too nervous. They got a kid. I went to practice last week. Got a kid over there named Dontrez Styles out of K-Town, Kinston, K-Mac. Don't sleep on that freshman. He the real deal too. So Carolina got some juice too, K-Mac. I know you was over there all happy.
Look,
I know you was over there all happy with CL was talking about.
No,
me and Pam just had to take it.
No, that's okay. Because I'm supporting our Tar Heels. I'm all in, and I want to see us.
This
year.
No, Pam.
Tar.
It don't even sound right when he says.
Let's go Hill.
Right. Let me tell you what's right.
It's the Sports Shop with Reese and K-Mac.
We're rocking out this morning, man. It was a good game last night. I want to spend this time real quickly while we hopefully get Vashti on in a minute for Game On, Game Over. To send out my condolences, Reese, from last night's loss for you.
No, we don't need no damn condolences. I mean,
for your Las Vegas Raiders and all.
We don't need any. Condolences not accepted. We thank you. We don't need no condolences. You kidding me?
What do you mean? I know that was a tough loss for you guys. Going down to the Chargers last night, 28-14, and I just got to be honest, man. It was a hard fought game. You guys played well. You did what you could, but you came up short.
Yeah. Okay.
As usual.
Yes.
And it was just it was tough, I'm sure. But I just wanted to show you my support.
No, don't worry about it. We don't need your support, kid, man. We're just fine. Okay. thanks, buddy.
That's why I didn't text you, because I was feeling bad for you.
Pam, I appreciate you.
Wait a minute. You appreciate her, but I try to give you support.
But see, that's sorry but not sorry support. I know what that's all about.
Hold on, let me get a third opinion before we go to Vashti. DC, don't you feel like, didn't it sound like I was being supportive just then?
No.
Thank you.
Well, damn.
Thank you.
Let me ask Pam. Pam, did it sound like I was being supportive?
No. Some people show things all over their face. You show it in your voice, in your tone.
You.
We know when it's fake.
My tone?
Yeah.
Well, damn. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. All right, guys. We go get ready for Game On, Game Over. Right about now, we got Ms. Vashti Hurt joining us. How you doing, Vashti?
I'm good. How are y'all?
You're good. Well, you back from Dallas and in Miami and Paris?
I haven't been to Miami or Paris. But yes, I am back from Dallas. Got back Sunday night.
All right, good.
Okay, all right, Slim. Okay. All right.
Oh, okay, Slim. Reese.
No, I'm not, I mean, came back.
What's going on?
I said last week, we went to the Coach K, you know, Duke Media Day, and this young lady was sitting in front of me to the right. You know, I mean, I speak to most people, but I didn't speak to her because
somebody new in the media? Somebody new?
I thought it was somebody new. I was like, who is this chick right here? You know, check it out. Then she gets up and walks back to there where I was, this lady, like, oh, Reese, you can't speak? I was like, well, damn, I ain't recognize who you was, baby. Hey, K-Mac. Best time. Best time. You killing the game. You are killing the game. I'm just telling you right now.
Thank you, Reese. I put in some work during the pandemic.
It's paying off.
Well, thank you. I take that as a compliment. Reese had me blushing a little bit up at the press conference. then I had to get my game face back on and try to get me out of my game. Can't have that.
See, you guys don't know how historic this is.
Yeah,
these two have traditionally been at odds for years.
Yep, that's true.
For us to reach this level of agreement, I feel like I've done my job as a mediator.
I'm sure it'll go downhill when basketball
real quickly. Trust me, it's gonna happen real quickly. I'm gonna tell you right now.
Oh my goodness! All right, guys. Bastard, what you got for us?
Ahead of the Panthers matchup against the Cowboys, Terry Bradshaw made a comment about Sam Darnold that gave many people pause. I have a clip. Here it is.
Terry Bradshaw. Ain't he about 90 years old?
Mm-hmm.
At least 90.
Okay. I don't know. Well, basically, in the clip, Terry Bradshaw said that he likes Sam Darnold. He likes he's had two games where he threw for over 300 yards, that he's accurate, and that he feels like the...
Now with 300 games from Darnold is this, a guy that can play the position, a guy that's accurate, a guy that has everything I want to see in a quarterback. I think Charlotte has hit on the greatest quarterback in the franchise history.
What?
Whoa! Come on, man.
Do I need to even put the... Do I need to put the question out there?
I got one answer for you. Hell no. How about that? Is that one option?
What?
I mean, you know what, man? You talk about prisoner of the moment. I'm going to just be honest with you. When you go that far, we don't have to have that conversation. Because we know better. We all know better. If you ask him right now, he's like, yeah, okay. You know, I was feeling pretty good.
I don't think he would say that. I don't think Bradshaw really liked Cam Newton, period. Terry Bradshaw did not like Cam Newton. He thought that his clothing was extra. He thought that his celebrations were extra. And so this is a clear knock. This is disrespectful to Cam Newton. And he knew exactly what he was doing.
Okay. Right.
I got you.
Wow.
Guys on the play.
I'm not
like
even sure he's better than the other guy.
Jake DeLong.
And to me, this wasn't about Sam Darnold. This was about Terry Bradshaw taking a shot at Cam Newton. It was tacky and it was completely, you know, it didn't even make any sense. How in the world could you say that Sam Darnold, after this small of a sample size, is the best quarterback in Panthers history? Absolutely ridiculous. Somebody need to pack him up for that.
Hold on. DC, I know we run over, man. Just, let me hear that just one more time. I want to make sure that he said that he was like, he's the greatest passer at all. What now?
What we're seeing now with back-to-back 300 games from Darnold is this. A guy that can play the position, a guy that's accurate, a guy that has everything I want to see in a quarterback. I think Charlotte has hit on the greatest quarterback in their franchise history.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm.
Did we? Okay, let me make sure I understand this. Two back-to-back games against teams that, a little bit to be desired. And by the way, if you want to do that, shouldn't we include his history on how he got to Carolina in the first place?
Come on, Bradshaw.
Yeah. This guy sees ghosts, man. You better stop playing with me.
Yeah, I mean.
Now, I wouldn't take personal shots at Darnold, but, I mean, come on. The way for Bradshaw to say that, I mean, maybe we'll chalk that up to 73 years and those hits coming into play with the old age. Maybe we'll chalk that up to that. But I really think that he was being in a not subtle, but in a roundabout way, he was taking another jab at Cam Newton, who isn't even in Carolina anymore and playing football right now.
Did Cam used to date one of his daughters?
Who knows?
That's the only explanation I see what Vassar just said, because it doesn't make any sense at all. It really doesn't.
That's the only explanation I see. I
mean, all right, let's stay on the Panthers. Carolina's third quarter woes continue. They've been outscored 28-7 in that period, including 21 points by Dallas. Game on or game over that the Panthers' third quarter issues are coaching and not player related.
Well, that's interesting, because if it's third quarter, and it's been consistent that way, I say two years in a row.
Coaching. When y'all gonna give your man his props for telling you the real deal?
Who was that, K-Man?
Who?
Two Shoe Teddy. He told you last year what the problem was. Oh.
No, the Teddy Bridgewater said that they didn't prepare for red zone situations.
Yeah, and too many drills.
Too many drills.
And nobody also told Teddy Bridgewater to go rogue and try to go over the top against Green Bay and get stuck. So I don't want to hear anything about any goal line situations from Teddy Bridgewater, okay? After he did that, anything that he had to say about the red zone is completely moot.
There you go.
Wow.
I went fast time.
I won't say that again.
You heard that.
My bad. But, okay.
But you know, I've been going back and forth with this. And, you know, I asked the players after the game, like, what is the issue? Because the Panthers seemed to have a good hold on the game Sunday, or at least they were playing well or decently against a good Cowboys team. And in the third quarter, they just come out on both sides of the ball and lay an egg. You would think after halftime, whatever the coaches are saying, you guys are talking about adjustments that you need to make, it would be a stronger effort from these guys. They say it's energy related, but who brings the energy? Is it player? I think it has to be coaching. The coaches have to figure out something that they need to do in that locker room during halftime, including making adjustments and inspiring their players, so that when they come out in the third, it's not like they left the stadium and have to come back in the fourth.
First, I said they left the stadium.
All right.
Well,
that's what it's been looking like.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to be quiet. I thought Bridge wanted to tell the truth on what the state of affairs is, but I want to stand down. Perhaps try to put me in my place. I'm going to shut up.
All right. Taunting penalties have caused controversy throughout this NFL season. And last night, the Raiders tight end Darren Waller got a 15-yard penalty because he spiked the ball after a catch along the Chargers sideline. What is the Raiders head coach name?
Gruden.
Thank you. Gruden said about the call, "I don't understand the taunting. I hate taunting. It's ridiculous. What happens after an interception or a touchdown, we allow those celebrations." So I ask you guys, game on or game over, that the league's taunting rules are dumb?
Last night was a clear example of an undisciplined team. An undisciplined team that did not know how to conduct themselves. And this is what happens when you have an undisciplined team like the Las Vegas Raiders.
First of all, that one play on the sideline was not taunting anyone. If you notice, he did the same thing when he was on the field. That's his way of getting himself going. And I think it's ridiculous. Matter of fact, that would have been the only first down the Raiders would have had in the first half last night. And it broke down our momentum, and it really cost us the damn football game, if you would ask me.
The whole football game?
Yeah, if you ask me. Not everybody else is going to ask me.
Well, it definitely cost him a field goal. I can tell you that. I mean, it cost him a field goal.
I can tell you that. Football game. Wow.
The guy he wasn't looking in the players. He just threw the ball down and went back on the other side. He wasn't trying to taunt anybody. That's it. That's what he does.
And he twisted his ankle.
Man. Anyway, it's ridiculous. The answer questions game. They need to get rid of that. It's ridiculous. It's
a disciplined football team. That's what it is.
Okay.
Well, what about the taunting, K Mac?
Yeah, I think it's complete. I think it's stupid. I'll be honest with you. Okay. I think that's it. But so here is an example of, if you just ask me, the referee, the union getting back at the league for saying, okay, we got to find something that you got to do better, that we got to, you know, ding you guys on. So they said, we need you to have a better point of emphasis on taunting. It's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. So now the referees are saying, okay, that's what you want? No problem. And they said, well, what are the rules again? Anything that is egregious after the play, after the whistle, that has nothing to do with the play. No problem. Which, by the way, if they did it by the book, they could call it damn near on every first down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they did it by the book.
Yeah.
So I just think this is something that hopefully somebody makes a phone call today or tomorrow or whenever and says, all right, hey, look, let's back off a little bit. Let's act like, let's let the flow of the game be natural. Let's not try to insert ourselves into the game. Because last night was a clear indication. It was actually a couple of them over the weekend, too, where I was thinking, okay, this is just the referees, the union just getting back at the league. That's all this is. Because it doesn't make any sense.
I like the celebrations. I like the trash talk. I tweeted the other day. I think the Cowboys running back had this big chain on, which I don't understand why you have this chain on while you're playing football. But if you were playing against me, I'm snatching the chain. So
that was a funny tweet, by the way.
Of person I am. So after a first down, after a touchdown, after an interception, I'm going to get at you. And these guys have been doing that their whole career. Like, there's so much trash talk in football. Oh, like, and so I don't, the whole taunting thing, spiking the ball, I think spiking the ball is one of the corniest celebrations you can have. That shouldn't be taunting on any field. But, you know, just let the guys have fun. I remember when Steve Smith, he would have a new celebration, and it was news to figure out what Steve Smith was going to do after he scored a touchdown. What happened to that? Like, you know, I think the league is trying to water down the game, and it's not.
NFL stands for what? Okay. No fun league, right? We always say that all day.
Let them celebrate.
There you go.
It's fun to watch.
Right. Exactly.
Do we have to, I had one more, and I don't know how
all
much.
Right, last
went
one.
Into,
all right.
Into
last
depth
one, best
on, I don't know how much y'all went into depth on Urban Meyer. But Urban Meyer, we know that he got, you know, he's being a distraction to his team. But he also didn't fly back with the team in order to stay. Did y'all talk about this?
No.
No.
So Urban Meyer got caught up. We know that. But one of the reasons why he got caught up is he didn't fly back with the team after the Bengals game. He decided to stay in Ohio. And what he said was to have dinner with his grandkids. So I ask you guys, game on or game over to Urban Meyer that he stayed and didn't fly back with the team to spend time with his grandkids?
Well, first of all, you are a coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. What the hell are you doing? You lose the Cincinnati Bengals, and you're going to just, hey, I'm not going back with y'all. Y'all go on back, bunch of losers. I mean, who does
Cry
that?
Baby.
I mean, exactly.
Who does that?
The same guy that quit that said, I had a cramp around my chest, so I'm going to just have to leave. I'm not going to coach anymore.
Sore loser.
Whatever you say you had, heart palpitations, whatever you say you had. I was like, come on, Aaron.
He's ridiculous, though. I mean, the clock is ticking. Yeah. The clock is ticking.
I agree. How does your team lose and you like, okay, y'all go ahead and go. I'm going to stay back and have dinner with the grandkids, but get caught up with this girl that, like, what in the world?
I mean, were the grandkids in the bar? I don't think so.
Somebody said he was having dinner with somebody's grandkids, but it wasn't his.
But they said his wife said she knew where he was.
Yeah, okay. The right thing to say.
But the issue, if this were a player, I think the vitriol would have been completely different. Yes. And yes. I think that Urban Meyer, although we're talking about it, he's kind of getting off easy. The thing that rubs me the wrong way is that, okay, you get caught up, the girl dancing on you, whatever. But the fact that you abandoned your team for that and did not fly back with them back to Jacksonville, like, guys review tape on the plane after the game. They might be discussing, especially after a loss, it isn't a celebration. It's, okay, we got to get back to work. And you out here having rubbing down somebody's girl in the club.
Man, Vesta, you sure have a lot of insight on, you know what they do on the plane and all. You must be an insider. I tell you, Vesta. Oh,
listen, all I know is that when after games, guys tell us, even after the Panthers lost, they said we're gonna get on the plane and we're gonna watch film. That's what they told us.
Right.
And so this is, as a coach, you set the tone. And for him not to be on that plane with those guys, this is that's the issue. And if a player had done the same thing, we would have.
Oh,
the player might not even be on the team anymore unless it's a big time guy. So.
All right. Well, Vesta, we're gonna let you get out here, but I'm gonna say this last thing for all of us on right now. So the NFL is talking about how they constantly look for high character individuals to lead their franchises, how they constantly look for certain types of men to lead their franchises. What's the coach's name, the coordinator name for Kansas City? Eric Bieniemy, is that right?
Eric Bieniemy, yeah.
So Eric Bieniemy not good enough for a job, but you got this Yahoo who gets 5 or 6 chances each and every day, and I'm supposed to take you seriously about your desire to put people of color in positions that they should be in. I'm going to just leave that there for a minute. All right? That part.
All right.
All right.
Mic drop. Glad I was able to do game over with you all this week.
Hey, Vesta.
Yes.
Vesta.
Thank you.
Paulo Bachero.
Listen, let me tell you, Reese and I were at Media Day, and we were listening to Paulo talk, and we looked at each other, we was like, oh my goodness, this dude. And then when he got up, I was like, what? I'm going to tell you, Paulo has that dog mentality, that mentality that you need. As a freshman, that's a dangerous thing. I haven't seen him on the court yet. But based on his size and his mindset, it should be a fun one. That Kentucky game will set the tone. If this team does what the Zion team did to Kentucky, it's going to be bananas.
Let's go.
All right, Vesta. As always, we'll see you
next
week.
All right, guys.
It's the Sports Shop with Reese and K-Mac. The Undefeated Spotlight. Now, it's time for an inside look at the latest news and commentary from the Undefeated, ESPN's premier website on race, culture, and sports. This is the Undefeated Spotlight with senior editor John X. Miller.
John X. Miller, how you doing, my friend?
Morning, John.
Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How are you this morning, sir?
Tuesday. I'm good. I'm good.
There you go.
Man, you know, I am
as
good.
As always, John, we're excited to do this same as we do each and every week. Man, what do you guys have for us today?
First off is Bill Roden and Roden's Road Trip. And this debuted on ESPN Plus yesterday. Mm-hmm. A 45-minute show on the origins of HBCU football. Bill Roden took a 2,500-mile trip, starting in Charlotte, starting in Livingston. I believe I referred to it last week. But he took a road trip about the origins of HBCU football. And the show is on ESPN Plus now. And we also have an article about it. It's leading the site now about Bill talking about this whole idea of tracking the legacy of HBCU football in 2,500 miles. And so he started out at Livingston, where the first HBCU game was played between Livingston and Biddle College, which is now Johnson C. Smith. And then from there, he headed to Florida, not only talking about Florida A&M football, but Florida A&M bands, because the both are really kind of conjoined together. Both had eras of greatness that really transformed HBCU band music and performances and HBCU football. And then the story went to Grambling. The story went to Tennessee State. And then it eventually ended up at Jackson State, talking to Deion Sanders and to Eddie George at the Southern Heritage Classic. And so, you know, he wanted to solidify and uplift folks with the stories of HBCU football, because so many people don't know the origins of it and know why it thrived, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And people like Doug Williams and Shaq Harris, you know, changed the NFL. And most people don't know that now, because now, as he says in the document series, that, you know, it wasn't until the early 70s when Southern California, University of Southern California, went to Tuscaloosa and beat the brakes off of Alabama. That's when the SEC and some of the other conferences realized, if we're going to be competitive, we need to get black players on our squads. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Alabama, for instance, looks a lot different now than it did 50 years ago with Bear Bryant.
He talks about
that transformation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he talks about that transformation. And so he was he did this along with the Roden Fellows, which are the HBCU students who are interns at the Undefeated. And they were a part of the interviewing process. They were a part of this project as well. And so he talked about legacy, the legacy of the football, the legacy of the bands, and how, you know, places like, as I just said, Alabama, which 50, 60 years ago did not want black players at all, now thrive on them and would be competitive if they didn't have black players.
Yeah. We're talking to John S. Miller. Wow. Undefeated. We're up with John each and every Tuesday, same place, same time. Yeah, Alabama looks like Grambling now. I mean, if you look at the defense.
Yes.
If you look, I mean, seriously, you got to look hard to find somebody. and you know, it's really ironic that's going on. I think it's a great thing. John, you guys got so many things out on the site today, and just something that happened yesterday with Bubba Wallace. Is going to get your comment on that, him being the second African-American to win a NASCAR race.
You know, that is poetic justice. You know, the first year that he's racing for the Michael Jordan team, he wins his first race, right? You know, and so, yes. The only other black driver to win the top-level NASCAR Cup Series was Wendell Scott back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And so Bubba, now racing for the Jordan team, is now the second black driver to win on the NASCAR's top circuit. And he did it at Talladega, which Super Speedway, right? And so that is one of the epitomes of NASCAR racing. Talladega, mm-hmm. Daytona, these super speedways are the places where, you know, legends are really built. And so having his first race won at Talladega is really significant. And so, you know, Bubba has been racing. You know, everybody now says, you know, the first driver to win a NASCAR race. Well, you know, truthfully, Bubba's been winning NASCAR races for years on the other circuits, on the Infinity Circuit, on the Grand National Circuit. So he's been driving and racing for years. And this is his 143rd start in the Cup Series. But he's been racing for years. So it's time that he won. But the important thing, I think, is now that he's got the team around him, the Pitt team, but also the team of Jordan and his brand, you know, supporting him. You know, you recognize, if you saw the pictures of him after the race, you know, his suit is a McDonald's suit now, right? All right. Mm-hmm. And so that means major sponsors are also behind him. And so that means major sponsor money is coming into the team. And the more sponsor money you have, you know, it helps the team in terms of equipment, in terms of the availability of travel, all of those things. And so, you know, kudos not only to Bubba, but to his team, because he couldn't have won without him. So this isn't going to be his last either, right? You know, this isn't going to be his last. And so it's historic, but, you know, history is nothing new to Michael Jordan. Am I right?
Yeah. Right. You talked about that earlier. You're right. Exactly right.
History is nothing new to Michael Jordan. And so kudos to Bubba and his family. You know, his son was at the racetrack when he won. And so that was significant as well. because that means he's passing those racing genes on to the next generation. And as we know, lots of the racers in NASCAR are second and third generation drivers. And so, yes, it's important that he's doing this for the current generation, for his self and for folks who are racing now. But he's also, you know, doing it for the next generation. And that's epitomized by having his son at the race with him.
Outstanding. We're talking with John X. Miller from The Undefeated on The Undefeated Spotlight, the same as we do each and every week. And John, you were just talking about Bubba Wallace and the significance of that. Just real quickly, coming on, he got very emotional, right, when he talked about it and the significance of what that is in these sports. And you guys covering sports in, you know, African-Americans and all types of sports, talk about how continuing to break through in these barriers, even at this late stage, seem to be something that we see each and every year, where there's a significant accomplishment made by an African-American in sports.
Well, you know, last week we talked about Lewis Hamilton, you know, winning his 100th race on the Formula One circuit. Yeah. And so I think what's significant about it is that the mountains that we've had to climb for generations are now being summited by people who have stood on the shoulders of people who've come before them. In one of the, in the article about Bubba winning, Wendell Scott's grandson was quoted and saying, he wished his grandfather could have seen this. So understanding that, you know, where we are in everything that we do, not just on NASCAR, but also in football, even as Bill Roden talked about in Legacies of HBCU Football, we're standing on the shoulders of people who sacrificed and gave in ways they couldn't have imagined years ago. And so the breakthroughs that we're seeing now are generations and decades in the making. And so I think that is what's significant about Wallace's victory, but also these other victories that we're seeing and that we haven't seen yet day by day, because they're cumulative. They're not just, you know, one-offs. They're being built on the legacy of people who've come before us. And whether, you know, I can say that in journalism. That's one reason Bill Roden started the Roden Fellows. And he speaks about this in Roden's Road Trip, about wanting the legacy of HBCUs to be prominent not just on the field, but also in the classroom. And not only not only in places where, you know, the stories on the field are being played out, but how those stories are being related in media by having Black journalists tell those stories. Right. And so hugely important that these things are happening all around. And as I said, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. We're going to see more and more of these as we evolve as a country, and as a people, and we're going to face resistance, right? And Wallace talked about this, right? Remember that noose incident that happened? I believe it was at Charlotte.
No, it was Talladega.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's even more apropos.
Yes.
Than what Talladega, right?
Yes.
And so these kinds of things are going to be resisted, and so the struggle is not new, but the struggle is not over as well. But the struggle continues. And so after 143 starts at Talladega, you know, it epitomizes the kind of the triumph and the struggle that, you know, folks go through each and every day.
Hi, John. I hope we have enough time to mention LeBron's and talk about him being silent about the vaccination.
Yes. We had David Dennis, one of our writers, do a commentary about LeBron and being silent about why players should get the vaccine, NBA players, why they should get the vaccine. And so we know about Kyrie, right? We know about the other players who have resisted taking the vaccine.
Sure.
And so David said LeBron, because of his stature, should be an advocate for taking the vaccine, because it's not just about the players, it's about our community, because our community has been, you know, overly impacted negatively by COVID. And so we know how the star power of athletes propels ordinary people to do extraordinary things, right?
Absolutely.
And things they might not have done or thought about doing. And so he's saying it's LeBron's responsibility to advocate for the vaccine, because it's a social justice issue. It's because we have been negatively impacted 3 or 4 times higher than the majority population with COVID. And so he's saying, because of LeBron's stature, he needs to cast this not just as a health issue, but as a social justice issue. And he makes the case in his commentary that if he had done that, you know, maybe even people like Kyrie might have changed his mind.
Right. But we did see that Andrew Wiggins. Here, but I agree with that.
We did see that Andrew Wiggins on the Warriors. He did change his mind and he took the vaccine.
Yeah, he did.
Outstanding, John. As always, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure having you on, John. And we gotta get out of here. But I'm sure you guys got plenty of good stuff coming up for next week.
Indeed. So take a look at the site. We got more HBCU coverage coming up this week. Jackson State and Alabama A&M play this weekend.
That's homecoming. Who? Let's go.
Wait a minute.
Let's go.
What now?
No, let's go. We gotta go, man.
Is that the battle of recent K-Mac? Is that the battle of recent K-Mac?
We gotta go.
Man, we may win both halftime and the game. Oh, my goodness. Oh, well. All right, John, appreciate it, man. Thank you. What you got for me, DC?
All right, folks, y'all have a great, great, terrific Tuesday now.
You've been listening to the Best of the Sports Shop podcast with Reese and K-Mac. Don't forget, you can download this podcast every weekday at WRALSportsFan.com, on our new WRAL Sports Fan app, and in the iTunes store.